During this disorienting political year at home and abroad, we've been asking writers and thinkers to chart the history of our time.
The movement is always about blaming somebody else for the problems that exist. It's about blaming that faceless other. And unfortunately, that's the trap that we're in.
We are singularly failing to articulate what that world should look like and how we can get there. And because we're failing to do so, people are frightened.
Our conversations have ranged from a former Nazi skinhead to a Pakistani writer and more. And today, we hear a voice from the White House. He's on the staff of President Trump, whose election reflected discontent in this country and also sparked much discontent. Michael Anton describes his job this way.
It's head of strategic communications for the National Security Council, which is the foreign and defense national security arm of the White House staff. I put strategic sort of in air quotes because right now I'm so consumed by the day-to-day responsibilities of the job that I haven't really had a lot of time to think long-term.
Michael Anton got where he is by sketching the big picture. He authored anonymous essays during the election campaign trying to explain the Trump phenomenon. One was called The Flight 93 Election, and compared the country to a crashing plane on 9/11. Now Anton is in the middle of trying to run the country.
New administrations are always subject to intense scrutiny. Everybody's interested. That interest goes up when there's a change of party. That interest just goes way up when the president is an unconventional member of his own party. And then it goes way, way up when the president was already an extremely famous person for decades before becoming president and had obviously generated extraordinary interest all throughout his campaign. I think there was a sort of general expectation that he couldn't win, wasn't going to win, so the victory came as a surprise, which just makes the administration all that more interesting.
So we've been asking people to help us understand where history is heading at the moment. And if we talk with Francis Fukuyama, he's worried about liberal democracy, that it's under threat in many parts of the world. If we talk with Mary Robinson, the former president of Ireland, she's worried about international institutions. Let me ask you about the man you serve.
Yeah.
How does the president see the direction of the world right now?
I think he sees it maybe in two ways. I think he sees a hopeful side, and I think he sees things to be concerned about. You know, obviously he viewed Brexit as a hopeful sign, but also just a reassertion of national sentiment, nationalist sentiment, if you will, of sovereign peoples reasserting themselves and saying, hey, we want to take control of our destiny. We want to put the brakes on globalization a little bit and reassert control over our country, our borders, our economic policy, our tax policy, with the recognition that, you know, the distinction of citizenship means something, and citizens are in it together fundamentally in a way that the world community is not. It's not to say that there is no world community, but that there's a reason why there are countries and why there are borders and why some people are citizens of one country and not citizens of another country, and that citizens of one country owe obligations to fellow citizens that they don't owe to non-citizens. And I think he you know, that's a core idea for his campaign. I mean, if there's a Trumpism, it is prioritize the interests, needs, and, you know, best interests of the existing citizenry through whatever lens and whatever policy, whether that's trade, whether that's foreign policy, whether that's economic policy, and so on.
Does that endanger U.S. relationships around the world?
It can test them for sure, because allies have, maybe not just allies, partners, other nations, let's say they have gotten used to America behaving in a certain way and not asserting itself in some of the ways that this president has asserted American interests. And so I think it does make them nervous. It feels to them, if not unprecedented, but like behavior they haven't seen in a long time, maybe since before World War II. But I think it's working out. So there have been some bumps, but it hasn't been nearly as bumpy as a lot of people predicted. I think the prediction of the foreign policy elite all throughout 2016 was that this president would come in and he would just wreck the entire world order and all the alliances, and everything would be in shambles before you could count to 10, and that obviously hasn't happened.
Well, the foreign policy elite is still concerned about East Asia, for example, where there are a lot of countries that have been allied with the United States. The U.S. would like them as a balance against China, and they see early signs of countries feeling they have to turn toward China because they don't know what to make of the United States anymore.
I don't know which countries you mean. I think this administration has...
Thailand buying $393 million worth of Chinese submarines, just to give an example
well,
off the top of my head.
Look, this administration reached out early and with, I think, real conviction to Asia. If you just run through We've had the Vice President, the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense have all visited East Asia. I think these are all clear signs that we take those alliances very, very seriously and want to keep them strong.
So how does the President think about China as the next great superpower, as a rising power, a power to be contained, a power to be opposed?
I think he thinks about it in a couple of tracks. One is maybe two principal tracks. One is in terms of the security issues that face the United States and the region and beyond, and the other is on the economic and trade side, right? And he was really tough on China during the campaign on the issues of economics and trade. And on North Korea, which is clearly front of mind for him these days, he feels correctly, I think, strongly, that his administration is seeing a lot of early cooperation, and he feels positive about that and wants to see if that can continue.
What can you say to reassure Americans who get very nervous when they think about this president handling that extremely delicate situation?
I would say that he understands the complexities of it, the dangers of it fully, and he undertook, almost one of the first things he did was ordered a complete review of North Korea policy in the first week of his administration. That review was completed despite, I would add, as you point out, some turmoil in the National Security Council staff. That review was completed in a timely way, in a thorough way, presented to the president with a very tough new policy, which he accepted. And that tough new policy is a careful policy that, you know, fully engages allies and partners in the region and you know, is absolutely cognizant of all of the risks. So I would just tell people, don't worry about it. That's not who this president is, and that's not the way he's treating this. That's not the way he's treating this particular challenge.
He's taking it seriously, and he doesn't have an apocalyptic vision of the world where he thinks that things must go to a disastrous end.
No.
White House aide Michael Anton, our latest talk on the history of our time, where we ask how we got here and where we're heading.